live from Everbank Field. 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Tony Smith.
Oh, Tony Smith.
And Mike Dempsey. Sorry about that.
Take over. Go ahead. What are we doing today?
I'm good with that. I would be happy to sit back here and follow your lead today, whatever you want to do.
What do you have cooked up for today's show? I can't believe he messed up the open.
Ah, sorry.
We got beef on crosstalk. We're all over the place.
Well, that was
today.
An upgrade, I thought. Yeah. Don't. That's not a knock on beef. I think we shouldn't knock beef. Beef does a tremendous job, and you know, it's a stalwart in the 1010XL universe.
So, I love beef.
There you go.
Beef is one of my favorite people. I know we're going to talk about you mentioned the article where the Jaguars offense poised to become one of the best in the NFL on NFL.com. We're going to get into that. We got the question of the day, basically asking you if you would be willing to trade with the Houston Texans if they're coming up to get their quarterback. And that question has layers, if you ask me.
It has tons of layers, right? I mean, for one thing, is anyone sold on this group of quarterbacks? Do we know that this
That's
group of quarterbacks
saying.
Is some great? I mean, is Jared Goff or Carson Wentz? Let's assume it would be one of those guys. Let's assume one of those guys came off the board. And I'm not saying this is at all likely to happen, but there's stories out of Houston that Bill O'Brien has kind of made it his thing that enough of this revolving door of veteran band-aids at quarterback. We need to find our guy. We have a defense. We were good enough to win the division with mediocre quarterback play, although Brian Hoyer's numbers in the regular season were a lot better than that playoff performance would indicate.
No doubt.
Okay, but they want to find the guy that they can build around long-term and build their offense around. So be that Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Paxton Lynch, any of these guys. Maybe they're content to sit back. Maybe they like Christian Hackenberg out of Penn State, who Bill O'Brien coached his first year with the Nittany Lions. And maybe they're content to sit at 22. I'm just playing the hypothetical game. Let's say they're in love with Jared Goff, and Carson Wentz goes number two, or vice versa. And they approach San Diego. San Diego says, no way, man. We lost Weddle. We got to take Jalen Ramsey. They approach the Cowboys. Cowboys say, no way. We got to get Joey Bosa here. Have to have Joey Bosa. Too good to pass up. All right. Jags are here. You got your choice maybe between a guy like Noah Spence, who could be a big risk, who could, by the way, maybe be available at 22. You never know how it's going to fall with off-field concerns with Noah Spence. You've got maybe Miles Jack coming off a major injury. We haven't seen him play much football in the last 18 months or so. You know, there's no perfect candidate necessarily for that spot. So, you know, we've had some of the responses, no, I would never make a division rival better. Well, what if it makes you even more better? You know what I mean? I mean, what if you felt the scales like, okay, we're making Houston better, but we're making ourselves twice as good as we're making Houston, right? We feel like what they're giving back is too much. Now, they're not going to give you J.J. Watt. I don't even know what the compensation would be. It's more a philosophical question. If the compensation were right and you felt like you were improving your areas of weakness, would you be willing to risk allowing a division rival to come up and draft a quarterback, knowing what the bust rate is, Tony, for quarterbacks in the first round of the NFL draft? I mean, go back to 2011. Cam Newton? Absolutely. Take him in a heartbeat. Take him number one overall again. What about the rest of that crowd, right? Gabbard and Ponder and Locker and who else am I forgetting? I mean, just a mess of guys in there. I mean, you know, there's no guarantee that Houston doesn't give up, or any team coming up to get a quarterback doesn't give up way too much. Look at RG3 right now, right? After one season, you thought, wow, Washington, they paid a steep price, but it certainly paid off.
And they weren't moving that far. It's
right.
Not like they were going from 20 to 5. You know, they were just moving up a couple spots and had to give up all that they had to give up. So, look, if you're talking about moving from 22 to 5 to go get the quarterback, they're going to be paying
a ton.
A lot.
A ton.
A lot, especially considering it's Dave Caldwell that they'd be doing this with.
Right.
Who asked for, the reason they haven't moved down in a draft at this point, honestly, is because he asked for more than anyone's willing to pay.
Take Houston out of the equation, all right? Would you be willing to move back to 22? Start there. Would you be willing to make that drop? Because I've seen a lot of people suggest, and everyone has their favorites for the draft, and that's fine. But I kind of chuckle sometimes. I see, well, draft Ramsey or Bosa, and if they're not there, move back and take Ragland. Okay, that's fine. You got to have a trade partner. So are you willing, under the right circumstances, to move back, and how far are you willing to move back? We're not talking about what you think Dave Caldwell would do necessarily. What would you do in that scenario? And let's say you're moving back to 23, one spot behind the Texans, right? That's even a further drop. What would it take, Tony? To take this year's first, probably this year's second, probably next year's first, and something else on top of that. Maybe a player who could come in as a starter, or a you know, a third round pick next year. Maybe what if you got a first and second this year, a first and third next year, and I don't know, throw in a fifth round pick in one of those years as well. Is that enough? I don't know if that adds up on the points chart, you know, but at some point you got to look and say, wow, you know, fifth round or fifth overall pick, there's no guarantee he hits. Even if we take the guy we love, even if Bosa or Ramsey falls to us, there's no guarantee. Is he really, is that any one of those players better than, let's say, five draft picks, including two firsts and a second rounder? To me, I think I'd be very tempted to make that kind of move.
Yeah, it depends on what you get with those draft picks, right?
Certainly.
Because you can go back and look at the major trades that have been made. I mean, I don't think Washington won. It looked like they did after 1 year.
They didn't win, but I think Atlanta did win.
Atlanta did fine, and I don't know that San Diego won, right?
Like which one?
In the trade, with the Eli trade, because they got Rivers, they got Kading, and they got Sean Merriman out of that trade.
Right, and if Merriman had played out his career, maybe you'd feel differently about it.
Right, and if the Giants hadn't won two Super Bowls with Eli Manning, you'd feel differently about it.
But from San Diego's perspective, does that hurt San Diego's side of the deal? Because would Eli have had Super Bowl titles if he stayed in San Diego? Would he have been better in San Diego than Phillip Rivers has been? I don't know that he would have.
I don't know.
Right.
But I know the Giants won two titles.
I get that. But,
and,
you know,
and Phillip Rivers hadn't
rivals.
Won one. But it's hard sometimes to figure out who wins and loses those kinds of mega blockbuster deals. And it's... you're projecting a lot in that kind of situation, and that's why teams don't do it very often, is because when you're having to give up what you have to give up to go get to number five, you need to be in a position where you feel like you're getting the missing piece. And if Houston feels like the only thing they're missing is a franchise quarterback, then maybe they're willing to go make that kind of deal. And if you're Jacksonville, where you feel like you do need three or four more pieces on the defensive side of the ball, it's a little bit more worth your while to do that, as opposed to taking the gamble that the guy that you're going to get at number five is like a centerpiece for your team going forward on the defensive side of the football. It's a gamble either way.
Oh, it's a gamble. And I'm talking more today about philosophically, if the compensation was somewhere within the realm of what you think is realistic, could actually happen, is there a set of compensation, a package of compensation enough to make you drop those 17 spots with a division rival? Just got this one from Kyle Swifty. He's not the only one who feels this way. At KShug on Twitter, said, pretty standard rule not to trade down with teams in your division. That's a rule? Really? How did Wes Welker get to the Patriots? Right? Miami traded him for a second-round pick. Might have been a second and a fifth, actually. Something like that. I mean, trades do get done within the division. There's no rule about it. It's just, it's kind of a thing that you don't want to put yourself in position unless the payoff is big enough. First of all, how many trades go down in the NFL, period? Not very many at all. I mean, draft day trades, sure, in later rounds you see some, but I bet if we look back at all the draft day trades last year, Tony, we'd find trades within the division. Now,
people might
say, you know, well, you don't do that if you're picking in the top 10. Okay, but how many top 10 draft trades have we seen in recent years, period? Okay, if the compensation is right, would you consider making that move? That's our Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day today. The article you referenced, we'll have a little fun with that coming back. It's entitled, with a question mark, Jaguars offense poised to become one of NFL's best? It's done by Chris Wessling. Used to write for Roto World, now writes for NFL.com, has for a few years. And he's writing it based off the Move the Sticks podcast with Daniel Jeremiah, with Bucky Brooks coming on. And they were talking about, they gave examples of 12 teams, 12 different teams at different stages of their development, and they were drafting them back and forth. Which team would you take for the future? Which roster do you want for the future? So we'll tell you where the Jags stacked up against some other teams, and you'll hear Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks' comments about the future direction, particularly of the Jaguars offense. I think you'll find it pretty interesting. Found some interesting statistics yesterday floating around, presumably about Nick Foles on the bad end, but Blake Bortles came out pretty good in this statistical measure from 2015, and we'll share that with you coming up as well. If you'd like to get on board today, 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the text line if you'd like to get in there. If you want to answer the fan feedback question of the day, you can tweet us at MD underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. You can certainly do that if you'd like to. And the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. Friday's brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL on 92.5 FM. Ah, glorious Friday is upon us. Hope everyone, I declare today a half day for everyone, Tony. We'll leave at 11. Everyone else can leave their job at noon. And let's all go enjoy this beautiful Florida perfect weather that we're experiencing right now. Where was this weather during Super Bowl 39 week? Huh?
I don't know. It came in on Sunday.
Right. It did come in on Sunday. What would a week of this kind of weather have done to change the tone of the coverage by the media for how Jacksonville handled Super Bowl 39? Couldn't have hurt. That's for damn sure.
No.
You know, that was part of it. Nobody could really enjoy the beach life all that week. Just nasty, miserable week, as I recall, and most do. All right, moving along. Pop quiz time to start things off on the program this morning. Okay? I think you'll find this interesting. I think Jaguar fans who have not read this article or listened to the Move the Sticks podcast will find this interesting. We'll hold Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks' comments to the side for a minute.
Okay.
I'm going to give you 12 teams, and each of these guys, Bucky Brooks went first, Daniel Jeremiah went second. You might want to write these down, as a matter of fact, if that would help you. Because what they did was they were asked, which roster would you want going forward into the future based on the way the rosters are presently constituted as you're moving forward? Now, I don't know if they limited that to the next 5 years or whatever, but basically, you know, which is the most up-and-coming roster, not based on what they've done, but what you expect them to do going forward.
Okay.
Okay? I will give you the teams here. Let me put them... See if I can put them in a randomized order. You've got the Cincinnati Bengals, okay? Got the Carolina Panthers, just saw them in the Super Bowl, of course. Got the Arizona Cardinals. Got the Dallas Cowboys. You've got your Jacksonville Jaguars. You have the Minnesota Vikings. You have the Oakland Raiders. You have the Pittsburgh Steelers. You have the St. Louis Rams. You have the Tampa Bay Bucks.
L.A. Rams.
Yes. The L.A. Rams, correct. The Seattle Seahawks and the Washington Redskins. You get all those?
Yes.
You got a dozen, okay? They each went in alternating turns and selected a roster and gave their reasoning. So I'd like you to tell me two things. A, who you would take out of those 12 teams as the most upcoming roster, and this is not just offense, it's offense, defense, everything. And, you know, it's age of the players, all these factors taken into account. Who would you select first, and who do you think went first? Let me see if you can get the top five teams selected. So give me a team that you think is in the top five for your personal, and then also one if you think that they put them in the top five.
Carolina, and I think it's both.
Carolina would be your number one pick, or would that be your top overall pick? They were fifth in this selection. Four rosters deemed by Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah to be more attractive overall than the Carolina Panthers. And obviously, you know, they have Cam Newton, but, you know, they've got, you know, decent options coming up at wide receiver, but Jonathan Stewart's getting up there. He's going to be 29 this year.
Yeah, but they just went to a Super Bowl without Kelvin Benjamin.
I understand.
He's probably their best wide receiver.
But 3 years from now, I guess they look and say, what, you know, where are all these guys going to be? I don't know. So anyway, they picked them fifth, which was a little surprising to me, I'll be honest, that they were that low. Who else? Who else do you have?
Let's see. And we don't know how long this projection is.
I'm just going to say for the next, you know, 5 years, over the course of the next 5 years. It just says drafting the best future rosters.
I'd still go Seattle.
Seattle. Okay. Seattle came in, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Did I say, by the way, I said Carolina came in fifth. They came in sixth in this.
Okay.
Sixth. Seattle was eighth out
of
12.
That's crazy to me.
8 out of 12.
Why?
Maybe you've got salary cap considerations, right? You've got, I mean,
they got like $30 million this year.
I don't know. You've got Russell Wilson for sure. You're losing Marshawn Lynch. There's no, you know, Doug Baldwin had a phenomenal second half of the season. Is Doug Baldwin that guy, or is he the guy that we saw for his entire career up until that point in time? Right?
I guess, but got the defense O-line isn't questions. Going anywhere.
No, the defense isn't going anywhere, but a lot of those, you know, a lot of people think, like Cam Chancellor, some of these guys, are they're going to have to choose, are they going to keep all these core defensive players at these high salaries or not? Anyway, that's where they came in. They came in eighth.
Sure. I'm not going to them. Their quarterbacks, like Dallas and Arizona, I don't even consider top five because their quarterbacks are too old for me.
Dallas and Arizona came in ninth and tenth right. on this list.
They're just too old. If Carson Palmer was in his fourth year, they might be number one for me.
Right. Different story. But so those guys are way
not.
Down the list here. Who else did you eliminate from contention, top five contention?
I would want to say Washington.
Washington's 12th.
Yeah.
They're dead last. Or actually, they're one of two that went unpicked. So
okay.
11th or 12th, however you want to look at it.
Who else went unpicked? Los Angeles?
Cincinnati. I'm just telling you.
They only make the playoffs and win the division every year.
I know they have up until this point, but, you know, and I didn't listen to the entirety of their reasoning. But they're, put it this way, they're going heavily on youth, and I'll just give them to you.
Well, if they're going youth, then they probably love Minnesota and Oakland.
Minnesota's number one.
Yeah.
Number one pick by Bucky Brooks.
Okay.
I don't agree.
Their quarterback stinks.
Well, for one thing, and he kept talking about Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson gives you that ability to run the ball. Well, Adrian Peterson's 30 years old now. You know, is he going to continue to be that 1,400-yard back for how long will he be? I don't know. So they went Minnesota number one. That was Bucky Brooks' selection.
Everybody loves Minnesota.
I know they do. They want to prop up Teddy Bridgewater. I just don't see it. But and he even admitted, he goes, his stats appear to make him a game manager. But I think he's more than that. his game managers are insulted by that. The stat line was not that impressive. But
no.
Anyway, the Bucks were the second choice. Daniel Jeremiah's first choice were the Buccaneers. And you look at the young offensive nucleus. You got Jameis Winston.
Sure.
You got Mike Evans. You got Austin Sperry and Jenkins. Right now, Doug Martin's a question mark because he's going to be a free agent. But
it doesn't feel like they're going to pay him. It feels like he's going to walk.
It seems like, well, it depends if he can find that money out there. I'm sure they would pay him $5 million a year, $6 million a year maybe, but I think he wants $8 to $10 million a year. Good luck if you can get it. The third team was the L.A. Rams. Now, you could argue they got definitely some talent on the defensive side. Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn had a down year, but he was injured a lot. You've got some talent in the secondary. You got talent in the linebacker core, too, right?
They could be losing half their secondary.
They could be. You're right. But
in the next 3 weeks.
Then you turn to the offense and you say, boy, if we can get any kind of quarterback playing here, you got Todd Gurley. That's a pretty good foundation piece of your offense for a team that wants to run the ball. I'm just trying to figure out what their argument might be. Because, again, I skipped ahead to where I saw them take the Jags off the board, and they came off the board next, fourth overall. It's pretty good.
So who was fifth, Oakland?
Fifth was the Raiders, correct. So that's your top five was Minnesota, Tampa, St. Louis, Jacksonville, Oakland, followed by the Panthers, the Steelers, the Seahawks, the Cowboys, and the Cardinals with the Bengals and the Redskins not getting selected. Maybe they're not believers in Andy Dalton. You know, maybe that we've seen the best of Andy Dalton. Here is what – it was Daniel Jeremiah who, after – the Vikings, Bucks, and Rams were off the board, had the choice of the next choice, and he went with the Jags. Here's what he had to say.
All right, so you go with the Rams. I'm going to come back. I'm going to go Jacksonville Jaguars with my next one here. And this young offense that they've assembled here with David Caldwell, when you look at Blake Bortles at quarterback, who had a nice year this past year, you've got those three receivers, really four. You throw Rashad Green in there, who played really well last year. But you've got a legitimate number one in Allen Robinson, who is, gosh, Allen Robinson, Buck, he can't be that old here. Allen Robinson is 22 years old. You got on the defensive side of the ball, we've got some work to do there. But you go back to the offense. T.J. Yeldon Young came into his own last year.
Over 1,000 scrimmage yards.
Offensive line, you got a couple. You know, Lindler, I like, is a good player. A.J. Cann, good young interior offensive lineman. They've got some pieces up front. Defensively, get Dante Fowler back. They have a top pick this year. They can add some more talent there. But I just think this offense is poised to be one of the best offenses in the National Football League. And unlike your L.A. Rams, Buck, they've got a quarterback.
They do have a quarterback. The quarterback is playing pretty well. Coming out the gate, they have a running back in T.J. Yeldon, who I think is like the next version of Levy.
Robinson, Hearn.
I mean, mean, they can be problematic. They have to fix the defense. But really, when you look at their offense is so good that you can kind of play a different style of defense with that team, because typically you're so explosive on offense, you're going to play with a lead. They need to acquire some passion.
My man, Telvin Smith, don't forget about him, too, at linebacker.
Really good player.
Yeah.
Really.
That's good. A good young core they've got. They need to get some more guys up front, get after the quarterback, improve that secondary a little bit, and they've got a good team.
All right, a couple of points here. One, Brandon Lindler is one of my favorite offensive linemen on the team as well. Come on, Sticks, Jeremiah. Lindler, really? I'll give him – Jeremiah's usually so good, I will give him a slip of the tongue on that one and assume that –
He probably knows how good the player is and just kind of whiffed on the name.
I hope so. I hope that's the case. And I get it. They're talking all, you know, about 12 different teams here at once. So – put that aside. He had a lot of nice things. He said, as for the defense, let's go back to the offense. All right. And let's focus on that. If you didn't catch it, after listening to it a few times now, when Bucky Brooks said, I think that T.J. Yeldon can be the next, he's saying Le'Veon Bell, okay, which is saying a hell of a lot. Now, I think in terms of style, you know, a guy who has, you know, quick feet, and that's what he's most known for, that short area quickness that he got praised most for. I think Le'Veon Bell has that in spades. They're both good receivers out of the backfield. You know, Le'Veon Bell's just an all-around three-down back. If T.J. Yeldon could be two-thirds the player is that Le'Veon Bell is, he's a solid starting running back in the National Football League. So that's pretty high praise right there. When Bucky Brooks said, with this offense, you could play a different kind of defense, he's just talking about that Colts formula, Tony, that you don't need to be 11 strong, full of Pro Bowlers when your offense is that good. If you can get second half leads and you got to find the pass rushers, and maybe Fowler will be one. Maybe they'll draft Joey Bosa or Noah Spence or someone else who will turn out to be his bookend counterpart. But that's what they did with the Colts for years. They just set Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis loose and chased quarterbacks when teams were down by 10 points in the fourth quarter.
You just got to find Freeney or Mathis. And
I mean, it's easier said than done, right. Granted. But
they hope they have one like that in Dante Fowler Jr., and we'll see what they do this offseason. I said it last year during the year that I really felt like Jacksonville was a dominant defensive lineman away from winning two or three more football games last year. I believe that. I think if they could have affected the passer just in a drive and gotten a team off the field, that it could have been drastically different. They had what? How many games did they score 25 last year and lose?
Four. They had four games. In fact, that's pointed out in the article.
That's an inexplicable number for a team.
They scored, what was it? I don't have it right in front of me right now. But as high as we know, 39, right? 25, 27, 31, and 39. We're losing scores.
You can't lose those games.
Offensive losing scores.
All right, if you lose it one time.
28, 25, one time.
Right.
Fine.
Then that's fine. But you can't, like, I think I was looking at the franchise numbers all the time. Last year was the second worst they've ever had defensively in the history of the franchise as far as points given up. It was just 1 point better than they were 2 years ago. In Gus Bradley's first season here in Jacksonville, that's what the defense was last year. And I think 2012 was the third worst season in Jaguars history defensively. So they've been on this run of really, really awful, terrible defense. And they got to figure out some way to fix it, because the offense does look like it's this shining star for this football team right now, and they're getting nothing out of the other side of the ball. And it's funny to me whenever they do lists like that. I don't see, if I was given the option to switch rosters with one of those other teams, it would be difficult for me to figure out as a Jaguars fan which team I would even want to switch with. I get that there are a lot of teams in this league that are better.
Would you switch with Carolina? Just being completely objective, would you switch with Carolina?
Probably.
How can you not? You know,
probably.
I mean,
but it's like Minnesota and Oakland, which are the two teams that they're basically growing with.
Right.
Right, and that's really the two.
Drafted their franchise quarterbacks together.
I don't think I'd switch with either one of those.
I don't either.
But they're both going to be ahead of them on lists like this from time to time. But Minnesota's
again,
number one. I don't get it. I just don't see it with Teddy Bridgewater at all.
I don't either. But they do. Minnesota does have some young defensive talent.
No doubt.
Okay, so they're a more balanced team, certainly. I mean, they went to the playoffs and came within an eyelash of advancing past Seattle. Seattle's another one. How do you not consider the Seahawks roster, you know?
They were eighth or whatever. That's I don't get that at all.
They're very heavily, I think, weighting youth. It's not like the Seahawks are an ancient roster by any stretch of the imagination. I just think they're looking at the core group of offensive skill guys and the fact that they're all young together. And, you know, if they manage the cap well here in Jacksonville, they can keep these guys together for the bulk of their careers. Really, you can have a repeat of Brunell and Jimmy and Keenan and, you know, mostly Fred, but, you know, you had some Jonathan Stewart or Natron or whoever in there, but, you know, those were kind of the core four explosive players, and maybe here you've got Robinson and Hearns to go with Bortles, and you've got Yeldon and maybe Julius Thomas, who's not ancient by NFL standards, and you could keep those five together for the next 4 years. How good could that offense be? Get, you know, playing with consistency in the same offense, building on timing and confidence and all these things year after year after year, you figure it's not always a steady progression, but you figure there's a pretty good odds that when you graph that thing out, it's going to be heading in the right direction for the Jaguars.
Yeah, and it's if you're looking at the offensive skill positions and like that youth on that side of the ball, and especially when you compare it to Minnesota or Oakland, I would take Amari Cooper, right? Because I do think Amari Cooper is probably a better overall football player than Allen Hurns is.
I would agree with that.
But I think they both can play in the NFL. Allen Hurns has proven that. So I'm fine with Allen Hurns. And the only other one I would consider taking off of any of those teams is Adrian Peterson, and he's old.
Right.
And so I would really have to think to myself, do I want Adrian Peterson for a year or two, maybe at the production he's getting, or the idea of whatever T.J. Yeldon might
be? Would
you
trade Yeldon for Peterson right now? I wouldn't a second. Absolutely. Because I think AP is on a mission. Having taken that year off, I look at him almost like he's chronologically 1 year younger. He did have 1,400 and something yards this year.
I know he did.
For the next 2 years, he's a good bet to rush for around 1,500 yards.
I know. It's 2 years, and I get that.
And especially
the windows are really slim.
When you put him in an offense, Tony, that they've got to respect the ball going down the field, which they don't in Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
So imagine what AP could potentially do here. He not only would benefit Blake Bortles and company, but there'd be a reverse effect. So I would make that deal. So there are a few individual pieces that I can look at. And that's, look, the overall point of this isn't, did the ranking come out perfectly? It's just an opinion. But these guys seem to share a lot of bullishness for the future of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And obviously, they got to find some pass rush. We know that. But you like at least some of the pieces that they have on the offensive line. You like Linder. You like Can to fit in somewhere and help this team.
And I like Parnell.
You like Parnell. Right. So you've got those pieces that you feel good about. And you hope that you can improve those other spots, whether through the actual player getting better or you upgrade from either within or without with a new starter in that role, maybe for Zane Beadles. But
yeah, and look, I think defensively it is easier to fix because basically it's always easier to tear something down than build it, right? Like that's just the nature of things, and that's what defense is about. It's about tearing an offense down. So I do think it's easier. That doesn't make it easy. You still got to find the right kind of pieces, but I do think if Dante Fowler Jr. is the guy that they drafted him to be, I think they can be drastically better on the defensive side of the ball in 2016 than they were in 2015.
Imagine they throw a Fowler and Bosa both out there on opening day,
yeah,
right? Maybe they sign a safety in free agency and they don't are not able to draft Jalen Ramsey, whatever. That's one of the possible scenarios. Speaking of safeties, how much consideration will Eric Weddle give the Jaguars? We'll tell you what he said, not specifically about them, but what he's looking to do with the remainder of his career. That's coming up. If you want to check out that story, go to NFL.com. It's entitled Jaguars Offense Poised to Become One of NFL's Best? Based on what Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks had to say, they seem to think that is the case. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This feels like home to you, I guess, by now, a couple years here.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 4 years, and now we'll add another year, and we'll see you on the second year with 6 years here. So really enjoy the town, really love working with this staff, and really excited to be back.
Like I said time and again, how valuable you are to him personally. From your perspective, what do you bring to the table with Blake to help him be his best?
I just really think, I mean, we study well together. I mean, we're always together, whether we're in the film room or on the field doing footwork, just bits and pieces. Anything he wants to ask me, defenses, different coverages, reads. I mean, we're a culminating factor together, and it's just a great relationship, and that's why I wanted to be back here.
That's Brian Sexton yesterday on Jaguars.com with Chad Henne re-upping on a two-year, $8 million deal to back up Blake Bortles here in Jacksonville. Brian and company do a tremendous job keeping you abreast of all the latest at Jaguars.com. And, Tony, this was kind of occurring as we were on the air yesterday. The reports came out that it was imminent, and then I think 12:26, the official word may have come down somewhere around that point in time. And, look, people aren't going to throw a parade over the backup quarterback re-signing, but, you know, I know there are a lot of people out there that think, Chad Henne's terrible, he can't win, he's proven he can't win in this league. What exactly do you think is available as a backup quarterback out there? Do you want RG3? I mean, do you want what he has shown, which has been a steady digression from his first year, a regression from his first year of getting worse? And a guy like that, like Chad, I think part of the appeal of Chad Henne is he is good enough to know your offense, fill in the pinch, not be overwhelmed. He's played football in the league, but he also understands the landscape. There's no clue in his mind that he's competing for a starting job in Jacksonville. He is the backup. RG3 thinks, and he should think, that his future is still somewhere as a starter in the National Football League. Maybe it's not immediately in 2016, but given the opportunity to play, I am sure he feels that is not over with. Now, maybe Chad feels the same way, but clearly he's comfortable at this point in his career coming in as a pure backup and nothing else.
Yeah, and look, it's why when we were criticizing Jacksonville a little bit for the way that they addressed the quarterback position there for about 10 or 15 years, because they had Mark Brunell and they really weren't addressing the position in the draft, and then they had Byron and David, and they really didn't do anything in the draft. And then you watch a team like New England, there's a reason New England has to draft a quarterback every 3 years, because whatever young quarterback they draft thinks that he's worthy of being a starter, and it turns out that he probably is, and so he wants to get somewhere else. And it's difficult to find a veteran guy that is willing to just sit behind the man and be the backup quarterback. That is a difficult thing to find. That's not to say that there probably aren't some backup quarterbacks in the league that are better than Chad Henne, but there are a lot of them that are worse than Chad Henne, and it's a good situation for Jacksonville. And certainly, if you're not going to re-sign Chad Henne, then you're probably looking into the draft to go get a backup quarterback. That's just the kind of situation that you're probably going to find yourself in. And to be able to bring a guy back that is comfortable with what you're doing in the offense and is comfortable as a teacher and a mentor for Blake Bortles still on the sideline makes all the sense in the world.
I'm sure we could come up with a short list of quarterbacks that are starters right now on their team that you'd rather have Chad Henne over. Case Keenum jumps to mind. I mean, if you put Chad Henne on the St. Louis Rams, are they better than they are with Case Keenum? I think they are. I don't know if it's by a wide margin, right, but you know what I mean? So clearly, there may be a few backups out there that are better than Chad Henne, a handful, but I don't think there are, you know, 60 quarterbacks in the National Football League better than Chad Henne by any stretch. For a lot of reasons, I think he makes a logical fit. So one piece of off-season business taken care of, and you can go back to not caring who the backup quarterback is until and unless Blake Bortles were to, knock on wood, suffer an injury that he will never suffer here in his career in Jacksonville. Tony, the Eric Weddle Jacksonville Jaguar experience, could it happen? Here's what Weddle had to say about what he's looking to do. Now, keep in mind, he's probably been in the postseason about, what would you say, about half the time in San Diego in his career?
I would think
roughly, so. Roughly about that, right? He said in the next 3 or 4 years, here's what he's looking for a team that is courting him. In the next 3 or 4 years, are they going to be competitive? Are they going to be division winners? Are we going to have a chance at the Super Bowl? This is what he's prioritizing heading into free agency. My question is, I'm very curious, and I wonder if, you know, like Ryan O'Halloran yesterday, he thinks the last couple of games really hurt the Jags because it exposed just how far away they really are from competing, right? When you let the Saints and the Texans run roughshod over you over the last couple weeks of the season, he thinks that will be a lasting impression in a lot of free agents' minds. I don't know, because for one thing, when those games are going on, Eric Weddle's not sitting there watching, you know, the Jaguars play the Saints, for goodness sake. He's aware of the results. I don't know how much he's studying them, but I think, you know, is he going to look at this team and say, wow, track record, awful. 14 wins in the last 4 seasons. I realize that stretches back to Mike Mularkey's one season right here. Or could you sell him on the Daniel Jeremiah outlook that, hey, I get what's happened in the past, but that's the past, baby. We need a couple of key pieces on defense. Look at this offensive nucleus. that they've got in place here, maybe the best offensive season in team history is on the way. Can you sell a vet like Eric Weddle, who is kind of ring chasing at this stage of his career? And by the way, it still grades out as one of the best coverage safeties in the National Football League, despite being past the magic age of 30. What do you think? Can you sway? I don't know if there's one pat answer. Are you probably going to be able to sway some of these vets in that mindset? Money will sway others no matter what they say about ring chasing. But a guy like him who clearly is putting that, he's made a bunch of money in his career and is putting this as a priority, do you think the Jaguars can make a compelling enough case to get him here?
I think they can. I think it's more difficult in this free agent market than it has been. I get it. The Jags have $70 million to spend. Everybody's got 30. I mean, everybody's got $30 million to spend. And we've talked about the free safety position in this league right now. Everybody wants one. And a guy that has the coverage ability of an Eric Weddle doesn't hit free agency very often, especially in an environment like this where I think there are going to be six, seven, eight teams that are going to be willing to spend whatever they have to get Eric Weddle there, and he'll have a choice between those options. I'm curious to see which direction he might go. I think there is a way to sell Eric Weddle on Jacksonville. I think there is a legitimate selling point for Jacksonville, and especially the position that he'd be in here. There's no doubt, right? I mean, Eric Weddle comes in, he's the free safety till he doesn't want to be.
You're kind of the quarterback of the defense.
Right. You're there. Yeah. This is who you are. You're already in a leadership position. We're going to pay you whatever you want, essentially, in Jacksonville. And we do think that we're a team that's close. Like, that's the sell job to a guy like that. I just think that there's six other teams that can have the same thing. And he's going to have a real choice to make when it comes to that.
And if that's the case, if the landscape is there are a half dozen teams willing to really open up and compete financially with the Jags, because, look, while you may have $30 million, that doesn't mean you're going to say, all right, well, I'm just going to overpay Eric Weddle by $4 million this year. That's usually not how it works. Now, the Jags are in a position where they need to spend money. And the one thing that gives me some hope is that last year, Devin McCourty, when he made comments about being pursued, seemed to indicate that he was really impressed. And if it weren't the freaking New England Patriots Super Bowl defending champs that were courting him, no pun intended, to come back and play, that he could have envisioned himself coming here, because he was really wouldn't have thought it going into the process, but once he got a chance to sit down with the decision makers and see the vision for where this team could be headed, was really impressed and said it was a lot harder decision than he thought it could be. Now, Eric Weddle doesn't have the opportunity to go back. They burned bridges with this guy. They didn't give him an extension. He was very angry about it. It's very clear to anyone who's followed this team closely at all, Eric Weddle's not going back to the San Diego Chargers.
No. I'm curious to see, look, Oakland has $68 million or whatever they have, right? That's a division rival. He stays in the States.
Losing Charles Woodson.
Right. I mean, if they're in on this guy the same way Jacksonville is in on this guy, does the idea of I get to go play San Diego twice a year, does that entice him too?
Hey, you know, we should all tweet Eric Weddle the price of regular unleaded at a Florida pump, okay? Because, Tony, I saw what it is out in California, buddy. And it's almost 2-1 is what you're paying compared to what you're paying here in Florida.
The Giants have a ton of money, too. They need a free safety desperately up there in New York. Chicago's in kind of the same situation. Like, if you look at the top five or six teams from cap space, free safety is a major need.
I want to know.
Like, for all of them, it's a major need.
Tyler Devitt, are you willing to give Uber driver, Tyler Devitt, are you willing to drive Eric Weddle around for the two days a week throughout the 2016 season?
Absolutely.
Can we throw that in?
If Eric Weddle wants to sign with the Jaguars, I will drive to California right now and pick him up and bring him.
You'll go pick him up.
I will pick him up personally in my new Nissan Sentra. I will go pick him up.
Did you just get a new car?
I did. Well, I got it about 2 months ago, yeah.
Okay, is that product placement? Are they giving you any money for
that? No, no.
Oh, all right.
No payment.
That was pretty swiftly done there, Peyton. Hopefully you're not drinking a bunch of Budweiser in your Nissan Sentra. That would be the greatest road trip live remote ever. We'll do it live from the Nissan, Tony, coast to coast. Me, you, and Tyler. Tyler drives so we can have all the fun. And we'll do a live show cross-country going to pick up Eric Weddle.
Jaguars today live on Route 66.
Oh, how good would that be? And I will not – you have a beard that looks relatively well-trimmed anyway, but in honor of Eric Weddle, who had the Grizzly Man beard last year.
Yes, he did.
None of us will shave from the time he signs until the end of the season. I think we can get that done as well. So, this may circumvent the salary cap, may come back to bite the Jags in future years, but it's like the 49ers and the Broncos, right? They circumvented the salary cap. They didn't take the Lombardi trophies away, Tony. So
no,
let's do our part to get Eric Weddle here to Jacksonville. All right, let's take a break here. We will come back. This date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL is right around the corner. Friday's brought to you by our friend Bob Roberts. First Coast Roofing. You have roofing concerns? You don't need to have concerns. Pick up the phone, call 287-7756. Re-roofs, repairs, wind damage, rain, hail damage, you name it. If it has to do with your roof, you just want to make sure it's in tip-top shape, call First Coast Roofing, 287-7756, license number CCC056797 for Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, our Friday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Coming back in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, mostly centered around some guys who were born on this particular date, February 19th. Go back to 1971. Glenn Milbert is an answer to an interesting trivia question. Who had the most total yards in a single NFL game? It was Glenn Milbert with 404. Vast majority of that came in returns, kickoff and punt returns. But no one has ever accounted for more yards in a single football game, and went on to become the general manager and director of player development for the Austin Wranglers in the Arena Football League as well. So there you go. Happy birthday to Glenn Milbert. Turned 45 today. We mentioned the hated Dwight Freeney earlier. Still kicking for the Arizona Cardinals this year.
Yeah.
I say kicking. He's still alive and playing and was actually effective this year in a reduced pass rush only role. 36 years old today, a 7-time Pro Bowler and 3-time first team All Pro. And a guy we saw, it seemed like everywhere we went out in San Francisco and the Bay Area this past weekend, former Jaguar linebacker Kirk Morrison. Oh, he's popping up. Tyler and I ran into him at the basketball game on Saturday night, the Warriors-Thunder game.
Sitting behind us, by the way. Sitting behind us.
He was. Yeah, he didn't exactly have as good a seat as the boys from Penn State.
Oh, yeah,
Penn,
he had a hookup.
That's right. Fox Sports don't pay like that, apparently. Is he still with Fox Sports? He was the last
I don't know.
I checked. But Kirk was a guy who started coming to Radio Row very early in his career and just did it for the experience of being in front of a microphone and doing interviews. The guy is very polished. I believe he used to do a show with Andy Roddick on Fox Sports on Saturdays a while back. But saw him at Media Day, saw him on Radio Row, saw him at the basketball game. He was just about everywhere. I don't know if I saw him on game day or not, but heck, I wouldn't be surprised. He was just about every place you could be in the Bay Area. 34 years old today. Happy birthday to all of the above. And, of course, your This Date in Football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. How about for you snorers out there, if you have a snorer in the family, the Somnomed Custom Fit Mouth Guard. You want to stop your snoring problems? No better way to do it. Call Dr. McCall's office to find out how. 620-9225. They're also a certified Invisalign provider. They offer a 10% discount on all first-time customer initial visits. Visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is This Date in Football History.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Detroit Lions linebacker Steven Tulloch announced on Instagram yesterday that he will not be returning to Detroit after 5 years playing middle linebacker for the Lions. Tulloch turned 31 years old in January, started his career with the Tennessee Titans. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network is reporting that the Chicago Bears are unsure if they will use the franchise tag on 26-year-old wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey if they cannot work out a long-term deal with him. Jeffrey has dealt with multiple soft tissue injuries during his time in Chicago, leaving some to speculate that there is still a chance that Alshon Jeffrey does indeed hit free agency in March.
Wouldn't be a target of the Jags, you wouldn't think.
No.
That's a hell of a good receiver to potentially hit unrestricted free agency.
Besides Kevin White, who do the Bears have at receiver if they let him leave? Nobody.
I mean,
Marcus Wilson?
Yeah,
Mark Mariani? I mean, come on.
Yeah, Mariani's like a slot guy, return guy.
Yeah.
yeah, Marquise Wilson is a guy that, you know, there had been some, ooh, he's going to, you know, one of those guys that people like to create buzz around, and he's going to break out. And I think he's had some issues staying healthy. Obviously, Kevin White, sight unseen. We don't know. Guy missed the whole year. What do you have, a stress fracture?
Didn't play. Didn't even practice.
Yeah, right, didn't get on the field at
all. A week after they drafted him, that came out, I think. Like
that's bad news. I don't know, man. And it's, you know, I saw a story today, Martellus Bennett likely not in the Bears' plans as well. You wonder if Zach Miller is going to emerge into an even bigger role this year. Really was one of the great surprises in terms of pass catchers in the second half of the season. Seemed to be a touchdown machine week in, week out. But you're losing Forte, so now you turn it over to Jeremy Langford in the backfield. You're going to have Cutler. And you take Alshon Jeffrey out of that offense.
Oh, forgot about Eddie Royal.
Right. I guess so. But he's not a lead guy. He's a guy that is maddeningly effective of getting open in the red zone, particularly when he's like the third option, right? He just has a great way of working out of the slot, and short area quickness has, you know, provided him a pretty solid career. But he's not anywhere close to a top of the depth chart guy at this point in time. In fact, I think even last season, was a disappointment coming off the year he had before.
Last year, seven in San Diego.
Diego, filling in basically when Keenan Allen missed a big chunk of the season, and he was so effective hooking up with Phillip Rivers. He trusted him on third down and then went to Chicago, and a lot of people thought, uh-oh, watch out here. You could see a little little fantasy relevance for Mr. Royal. Did not come to pass at all. Tony, saw a statistic yesterday. I don't know if you caught the article on Pro Football Talk about Nick Foles and failed completion percentage. Did you see that yesterday?
No.
Failed completion percentage is a statistic from footballoutsiders.com. Okay? And you can, you know, feel how you like about these advanced
metrics. Like a guy is open and you throw an incomplete pass?
Well, here's what it is. These are complete passes that fail to do the job. In other words, this is their system that they've come up with. Any complete pass that fails to gain 45% of the needed yards on first down. So, in other words, if it's first down and 10 and you complete a 4-yard pass, that's a failed completion. They're saying you need to get 45% on first down, 60% on second down, and 100% on third or fourth down, because it's either that or punt, basically. So, you know, the point being, Nick Foles,
they're basically putting a measure on what is or isn't a successful play.
Correct. And that, it's their metric.
It's their metric.
It's their metric, and you can agree or disagree with the methodology. But the point was, Nick Foles, as bad as he was even worse than it appeared, because it appears he padded his stats with a lot of those 8-yard completions on third and 15. Type plays, you know, and at the end of the year, you're like, oh, the numbers are pretty good. Now, I would argue that a failed completion is certainly better than an incompletion, right? But it's not as good as, not every completed pass is the same. If, you know, the other team knows it's third and 30, we give up something underneath and they pick up 20 yards, okay. Is that an explosive play? Well, by a lot of teams' definitions, it is, but who cares under the circumstances? So Nick Foles was atrocious. In fact, he was so bad, he was like the worst since they've been keeping his stat last year. He was horrific. He was 37th in the league, which is dead last among all the guys who qualified. And I think it took like 100 completions to qualify, 100 overall completions to qualify. Second worst in the league. This will make you feel a little good in Schadenfreude kind of way. Mr. Gabbert was second in failed completion percentage last year. Fourth worst in the league. Teddy, game manager, Teddy Bridgewater, right? And keep in mind, here are the quarterbacks at the bottom. Foles, he had that 1 year under Chip Kelly that seems more and more like the aberration, right?
Yes, it does.
Gabbert, we know what we think about Gabbert. Matt Cassel, Bridgewater, Colin Kaepernick, right? And who thinks Colin Kaepernick at this point in time is the guy you want to hitch your wagon to, right?
Nope.
You know, San Fran's not even sure. Peyton Manning had a horrible season. Tyrod Taylor, who played well at times, but did it in part because of the threat to run and convert third downs, had a pretty good running game. Josh McCown, Sam Bradford, Tannehill. You get to Flacco, which is interesting. I mean, Flacco's the best quarterback we've come to in this list. And I'll admit, Aaron Rodgers was 25th, but Aaron Rodgers had a bad season by Aaron Rodgers' standards,
yes,
right?
Yes, he did.
And you take his primary field stretcher out of the equation in Jordy Nelson, and that's going to hurt on converting those third and longs.
Who are the top guys?
Well, that's what I'm going to get to right now. Who do you think is the top guy in the National Football League this year in this statistic?
That'd be Blake Bortles.
Tom Brady.
Cam Newton. Okay, I mean, Cam Newton had an MVP season, right? Here's one more indication of why. His failed completion percentage was only 14.9%. So by comparison, Nick Foles was 41%. 41% of his completions were failures under this metric.
Under that stat, yeah.
Gabbert was 35.4. So a wide margin between Foles and Gabbert, but still, that's where it is on the other end. Cam Newton was 14.9%. Carson Palmer had an excellent season, was an MVP candidate this year, 15.2%. This one surprised me. Third best was Jameis Winston. Okay. Now I think part of that is, you know, you got a young guy. He wants it all. He probably hasn't learned yet to take that 5 yards on 3rd and 12 and punt the football away. So there's probably some of that in the
Probably past. Hasn't. And the guys that got playing wide receiver are big guys.
They're
down
big
field.
Big down the field guys. You're absolutely right. So he was third. Blake Bortles was fourth best in the league in this in terms of, you know, look. Now that's not to say I wouldn't like to see that number rise a little bit. Because, you know, you take all the incompletions, right? All right, well, you're not going to pick up a first down in every one. If you kept everything else the same and on 10% of those incompletions or whatever, you had what were quote-unquote failed completions, you would still pick up, you know, incremental yardage. It would still, and maybe it puts you, even though it was a failed completion, you didn't get 60% of the needed yardage on second down. Let's say it was 2nd and 10 and you got 5 yards. Well, 5 yards on 2nd and 10 is better than no yards on 2nd and 10. So it can be a bit of a misleading statistic. But I thought that was interesting that Bortles finished in the top 10 in that category. And I do believe probably because his propensity to take shots downfield that, you know, and his completion percentage wasn't that high compared to some of the other guys overall, that if he had a, you know, a 60% plus 61, 62% completion percentage, well, that number is probably going to rise. But, you know, Tom Brady is at 14th in the league, for instance, at 23.9. The fact is, there are a lot of guys in that low to mid-20s number. Blake happened to be at 19.4%. The really bad guys are, you know, high 20s to 30-plus, or in the case of Foles, 40-plus. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah,
you know, just
where was Alex Smith on that list?
One measure. Alex Smith was, do you think he'd be good or bad?
Bad.
He was 26th.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's pretty bad.
He checks it down a ton.
Right. Other, you know, Mallett, some of the guys in the back half.
Did you say Brian Hoyer at all? Brian Hoyer, where was he at?
Hoyer actually, this could certainly delegitimize a lot of this. Although, you look at Hoyer's numbers this year, TD to interception ratio, pretty good. Hoyer's right behind Bortles in this category. So, but.
Doesn't surprise me.
Again, they take shots downfield, right, due to the nature of DeAndre Hopkins and that wide receiver core. He was not the most efficient quarterback, but in terms of getting the ball in the end zone and not turning it over, he was pretty efficient in those categories. So anyway, just something interesting, I thought, that it, on a day when a statistic comes out that bashes some quarterbacks, Blake Bortles actually did very well in that. And when you look at the guys at the very top, you're talking about MVP candidates and Newton and Palmer. So, again, it's not the be-all, end-all of statistics, but it's an
interesting metric for basically to see what quarterbacks are doing on down and distance plays. Especially, like, if they just eliminated first and second down in that metric and said, here's the number on third down for these guys, right? I think that would be a really interesting number to take a look at who is being aggressive on that down.
And I'm sure they have those numbers. I'd love to see them publish those numbers. So, anyway, coming back, Johnny O's going to join us. We will hook up with him. Will that be a failed completion or a successful completion? Will we get the needed yardage here on third down? John Osier, Jaguars.com. Coming up next, it's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on a Friday, brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Johnny O is in the house from Jaguars.com and many spectacular Jaguars.com broadcast.
Oh.
Radio and television
just
star.
The best. You don't get better than that.
Book author. What else?
Performer.
Performer.
Talented singer.
Actor. exemplary father, right? Great, wouldn't you say? Great father to your son.
It probably depends on who you're talking to.
One son. How many kids you have? Just
one.
One yeah. Son that you know.
One son. Right. Yeah, I think I'm pretty. I'm pretty safe on that front.
All right. This, you never know.
I mean, look at me.
Well, no, you're come on, stop. You're a handsome guy. You're as good a guy as there is in the entire world, John. So there you go. John, thank you for stopping by,
John. You got
all right. Thank you, Mike. We'll see you at the combine. Sir.
Yes.
He's got his own fan club.
He does have his own fan club, and they show up every pregame to cheer you on. Every
a
hang on
small,
your
small diluted group.
Well, they're like I think you could run for. Put it this way, you could run for one of the major party nominations, they would support you, and then when it went to the convention and there'd be a brokered convention and you'd get screwed,
right.
They would still stay with you.
I could be the mayor of a very small town.
Yes. Yes, you could. All right, let's talk a little Jag football. You are getting ready to go up to the combine. From your perspective, are you just trying to meet and interview as many prospects as you can that think fit the Jaguar mold? And
not really. I mean, I try to take time Wednesday, Thursday, Friday primarily and get around the podium for when the higher profile guys talk just to get a feel for who these guys are, what their stories are, how they carry themselves. You might grab one or two off the side if you can get a big name that's really been linked to the Jaguars. But for the most part, it's about going up and trying – you know, to listen to Dave and Gus when they talk. They'll be on Jaguars.com live with us. I believe we're breaking up into Thursday and Friday, if I'm not mistaken, but that's still sort of being determined. So it's about when Dave and Gus get up there, they've been sort of out of the limelight for about 5 or 6 weeks and have looked at the game from last year and have a little better idea of the direction they're going. So, again, when we travel, it's usually – to focus on our guys, Senior Bowl, Combine. And when I look at players in this, it's more just to continue to try to get the overall feel of how good this class is, what some of these guys are like.
If you had a wish list, though, what is the short list of kind of guys that may fit with the Jags and our high profile
right.
guys? Certainly Jalen Ramsey, Joey Bosa. Who else would you had your choice of talking to anybody?
Noah Spence, again, to look at. I'm with you. I don't think that's the direction they go at five because of the off-field stuff. But he's certainly going to be a story. The more people talk about him and the more spotlight is on him in these situations. He seemed very polished at the Senior Bowl, very saying all the right things. So you kind of want to see if that continues, if there's any cracks in that armor, so to speak. DeForest Buckner, I'm anxious to see, just to kind of see how big he is, how impressive a physical specimen he is. Again, trying to get an idea. I'd like to see Miles Jack, you know, guys like that, just to get a better feel because you see names.
Right.
And the combine is the one chance that you have to sort of see all these guys, how they behave, how they carry themselves. Is that of value? I don't know how much that's going to play into where they're drafted, but it gives us a better idea of who we're talking about going forward to the draft.
Hypothetical trade. I mean, we talk every time you talk trades. It's kind of a hypothetical
sure.
thing. But as a general rule, I mean, Dave Caldwell seems to strike me based on comments he's made and actions that he's taken that when it comes to that first pick mm-hmm. overall, and they're hoping this is the last time they draft in the top 10 for a long time, right? That if you've got a chance to get a true difference maker, it's going to take an awful lot to move them off
right.
that spot. And I understand that philosophy, but part of what we're talking about today is, hypothetically, would you be open to trading with a division rival, specifically Houston in this instance, because the reporting is that Bill O'Brien really wants to draft the quarterback of the future in the first round this year.
Right.
Whether he likes one of the guys like Christian Hackenberg, who he coached in college, enough to wait for him at 22, or let's say he did love Jared Goff or Carson Wentz, if the price were right, would you be willing to make a deal with the Texans that potentially hands them a franchise quarterback? Of course, that comes with a lot of risk. That guy could be
right.
a potential bust. Or are you philosophically opposed to trading that high profile of selection to a division rival?
Well, I think it goes back, and we discussed this a little off the air, but I don't necessarily buy into, oh my goodness, you're helping your division rival. Well, if you don't like the trade enough to make yourself significantly better, then don't make the trade. So it doesn't really matter to me whether it's a division rival or not, meaning, you know, if you think you're getting a quarterback, I mean, if you think you're giving them a quarterback, which is what the fear is, well, then make sure that what you get in return for that is enough where, along with Blake Bortles, you're going to beat the guy anyway.
Right.
So I've never been as much, I guess I just believe, make yourself better and good enough to beat people and stop worrying so much about who's playing for the other team.
I tend to agree with that as a general rule.
Yeah.
I do think there's kind of a bit of a gray area that, like, you may be in a position to take less than the chart says. You may feel like, you know what, the chart may say this, but I like, if I'm dropping from 5 to 10, I like 6 guys about the same. And even though the chart says I'm getting hosed a little bit, I'm willing to not get as much as the book says I should get,
right,
and I'm going to send this pick to the New Orleans Saints. Whereas, if you're in that kind of gray area, maybe I'd be a little more hesitant to do that,
right,
with a division rival. But
I don't think Dave Caldwell, you know, I can't speak for Dave because I haven't asked him about this scenario. I don't get the feel that he worries that much about, is this a division rival that I'm trading with or not. He hasn't traded a whole lot on,
right,
that front to have a huge track record.
He's been a move up guy in the later rounds more so than a move down guy.
Yeah, but I don't think he, again, I think he takes the approach, let's get this team good enough. I've got my franchise quarterback. So why aren't they worrying about helping me? I guess is more his philosophy rather than always being worried about what the Colts are doing and what the Texans are doing. It's okay to go beat those guys.
Part of it would depend on your evaluation, too. If you're Dave Caldwell and you're sitting there saying, all right, let's say Carson Wentz was the first quarterback. You're
right.
Going to Cleveland. And you're like, I just don't see it with any of these other guys. I personally evaluate these guys,
right,
maybe lower than the
right
consensus is, so come on up and get them.
Now, the key is, quarterback or not, if you're Dave in that situation, whether or not you're giving somebody else a chance at a quarterback or whatever, you know, you've got to be looking at it and saying, is this fifth pick, meaning this number 5 overall pick, is he a dramatic difference maker? And if he is, then you don't trade out. I mean, and I think that part will play more into who they're giving up. I mean, who's trading with them, be it the Texans, the Titans, whatever. I don't think that would play in as much as, do I love this guy? If Miles Jack is at 5 or DeForest Buckner, is this a franchise-defining, momentum-changing player? And then if it is, I think it'll take so much to get out of it that I don't think he'll do it.
Yeah, we all sit here and we throw these names around, and we have no idea
right
now what Dave Caldwell. He may feel Joey Bosa is the number one pick of the draft. He may feel like he's the 15th best
right
pick.
If he's looking at the number 5 pick and going, eh.
Right, we don't know.
Right.
But one of the names, you mentioned Miles Jack a couple of times, and that's one of the names that has been.
And I just throw that out because it's a name.
Absolutely, and I understand that. But in the conversations, we're trying to fit the logic puzzle together. You could definitely see a scenario where Tunsil goes number 1 to Tennessee, then a quarterback goes to Cleveland, and then Ramsey and Bosa in some order go 3 and 4.
Right.
And that seems to be, you know, most Jag fans at the moment are centering in on those two guys at the top of their wish list. So if they're gone, they start looking, is it Noah Spence, is it Miles Jack, is it whomever? I don't know if you heard it, but after you were on with us for a couple segments on Wednesday, we had Russ Landy on, who is currently the scouting director for the Montreal Alouettes, and he said that Luke Kuechly had been the best linebacker in coverage that he had ever graded, ever, until he graded Miles Jack. He said, this guy is the best coverage linebacker he has ever seen. And you love speed.
Yeah.
You know, he does project to ultimately being a middle linebacker who can cover sideline to sideline. How much does John Osier put into consideration? He may not be ideal to play at that size, on the outside, next to Posluszny, on the strong side, taking on tight ends, doing all that stuff. Do you say, you know what? He's the best player for the long term. I'm going to find a way to make it work with these three, the most talented linebackers I have playing together.
If there are traits in a guy, like you just mentioned, you know, I haven't studied Miles Jack enough to know.
But let's presume they're very bullish on what
that's correct.
Randy said.
Put it this way. If Dave Caldwell feels about his pass coverage ability the same way that Landy does, then what you're talking and what you're looking for in an NFL player is, does he have something that makes him special and unique?
Yeah.
And if he's that level of player on that, then all of a sudden he doesn't have to be a perfect fit for position. He's got a talent that'll take him above the X's and O's. And he's a playmaker, and then all of a sudden you think, okay, we've got this guy. Let's figure out how to make this guy as good as he can be. So if there's a trait in a guy like that, then yes, that breaks the mold of we have to get a pass rusher at X.
Do you think they do?
If that answers the question.
Philosophically, and I think it does for you, but philosophically for this organization. You know, you hear coaches say it all the time. You've got to fit your scheme to your personnel. But they have a vision for what they want their scheme to be on the defensive side of the ball. Are they more married to that than they should be, in your opinion?
I don't think they're as married to it as people think.
Okay.
Meaning there is a, you know, and Gus has said this before, too. The Leo position, I just use it as an example, is Chris Clemens, Andre Branch size, right? Well, Gus has said many times, there's no rule that guy can't be 6'5", 300.
Right. If he can,
as long as he can rush
the
passer
right.
and disrupt.
Yeah.
Now, the reason that it works is it's often easier to find. There's more guys who look and play like Chris Clemens and Andre Branch. Bad examples, because it.
I understand what you're saying. The style of play.
But a Fowler-sized guy. Fowler's a little bigger than that. But so if Miles Jack can come in and do things from the strong side backer spot, especially on third down, which is again, remember, where this defense really needs help is in passing situations.
Well, third down, I mean, Tony and I were talking about this yesterday.
So guys who can run.
He would slide inside and in the nickel, and Puzzlewski would
probably
be off the field.
So that makes a lot of sense. I don't think, when you look at this team right now, don't look at just needing 11 guys for your first down depth chart. Look at needing about 16 with five starters who are playing on third down, because if they've been better on third down, the first and second down defense was fine last year in terms of stopping the run, getting in situations to get to third and seven. They had no problem with that. I mean, they weren't the 85 Bears.
Understood.
But they were good enough to win games the way they played defense on first and second down. It was when they got to third and seven that they lacked. So a guy like Miles Jack comes in, and he's your middle linebacker on passing situations until you figure out what else he is. Why not? If that makes you better, if they get better on third down on defense, they get better.
I really, I smiled inwardly when he talked about it. He loved Miles Jack. He also loved DeForest Buckner and said that, you know, this is one guy's opinion, but he's a guy who, you know, he's been around, and he's employed by a professional club. Well,
right.
I mean, I get it. It's Canadian
football.
Yeah,
and so am I.
Right. Well, true. But not in the talent evaluation department. But he said Buckner is going to be a star in the league. And he thinks he's a perfect fit to play the Red Bryant left side end, basically,
right,
in the Gus Bradley defense. Thinks he's absolutely spot on for that. And he gives you the flexibility that he can move inside and penetrate from the inside.
Flexible, versatile, disruptive guys.
You know, people have asked me, if you get him, what do you do with Andre? Well, what you do is you
don't
put your
just
best
play
players
four
on
linemen.
The field. Right, you play eight at least.
Right.
And so Odric has got the versatility. He can help you inside a little bit as well. You'd have options.
When Seattle is good, they're still very good defensively. When they're going right and you watch them, you can't keep track of who's
right
rushing, who's on the field, who's playing where. They're all over the place. They're coming at you. And again, it feels like they're coming at you in waves. There's nothing wrong with having more than one good player at a position.
All right, Johnny O on Twitter, of course, at John Osier, and on the digital pages of Jaguars.com. What will we see from you this weekend before you take off?
Today, just sort of wrapping up the week today. Next week, early in the week, a mock draft. For example, you know, Jaguars.com.
Maybe we can get the author of that on the program.
No, he's not a big fan of the show.
Okay.
But,
understood.
And then just some stuff with there's some conference calls with Mike Mayock and Mel Kiper, trying to set up the combine for what to watch. And then trying to get Gus Bradley before we get there, too. So a smattering of Jaguars and draft coverage. About
which
that.
Is about what you would hope for. Yeah. At this time. Not only expect, but hope for at this time.
And I'll be smiling inwardly a lot, too. I like that phrase earlier. So I'll be smiling inwardly a lot this weekend. Like
beautiful.
You.
I like to smile inwardly. It's probably how I smile the most is inwardly, thinking about myself. All right, John, have a good weekend, safe travels, and I know Tony will, I'm sure, see you up there, and hopefully we'll have
not if I see him first
to catch up with you on the program, despite the fact that you hate us and not enjoying it at all.
So, I look forward to it.
Have
guys.
A good weekend.
All right, guys.
We'll see you. John Osier from Jaguars.com, the senior writer with us here in the Oh No's block. On 1010XL 92.5 FM. Coming back, we will look at your responses to the fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Would you be willing to trade the fifth pick to the Houston Texans, trade down to their 22nd pick, if it meant the Texans could potentially draft a quarterback of the future at five? Are you fundamentally opposed to that, or at least would you be open to the potential of doing that? We'll discuss some of your responses coming back on the other side. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Friday, brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, final few minutes of the program today. We'll turn you over to XL Primetime at the top of the hour. Let's get one quick one in, Tony, before we get to the rest of these fan feedback responses today. Thomas on the south side, you're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, buddy.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Good. What's up?
I just wanted to say, you know, about the question, if they decided to trade back, I wouldn't have a problem even if it was Houston. And I guess you could say it's kind of a homer thing to say, but, I mean, I trust and have liked, you know, what Dave built. So I look at it from this standpoint. If they were to have the confidence to make that trade, number one, I feel like it puts pressure on Houston because they have to nail that pick. And then number two, technically you weaken them because, I mean, to move back that far, more than likely they're going to have to come up, you know, with a lot of value to make that trade. So you weaken them by taking more picks from them. So that's kind of the way that I thought about it. But thanks for taking my call.
All right, thank you, man. Look, I'm on your side with that. I don't know what the exact formula is. It's more of a philosophical thing. Are you willing to at least explore the possibility? Here's one, Tony. I'll do some of the Facebook responses first. Again, the question was, you know, would you be willing to, and you can't put everything into a 140-character tweet, but would you be okay with the Jags making a draft day trade with the Texans that allowed Houston to grab their quarterback of the future with the fifth pick? Potential quarterback of the future is really part of the key. Cause
yeah, you don't know.
You don't know what Jared Goff or Carson Wentz is going to be in this league. How many of these guys have we seen come into the league and do absolutely nothing? Joshua Lee Wright said, nope, I would not. You never give a divisional opponent an advantage like that. Well, I'll go on. You could potentially set them up to be successful for the next decade or more by giving them potential franchise quarterback. I don't care if they offer you the next 3 years worth of first round selections. It means nothing if they land their quarterback and continue to pummel you and the division for God knows how long. Right out of the gates, I know he said potential after that, but he said you never give a divisional opponent an advantage like that. How do you know it's an advantage? What if you're sitting there in your day cold and you think these quarterbacks all stink? All right, I don't see what everybody's way overrating them because of the desperate need for quarterbacks, and I think I'm handing them 11. Right? I mean, yeah, potentially you're wrong if you're Dave Caldwell. Me personally, I would not shut out the idea that I can't trade with Houston. What if Houston sits there at 22, and one of the quarterbacks who falls to them turns out to be better than the guys who went ahead of them, which happens all the time, right?
Sure.
So, it depends on, I think, how you feel about what you can get at five. What you could get in the compensation, obviously, coming back, and how you feel about what you'd be handing potentially, because you know what they're coming up for, right? And would you be willing to say, all right, you've got your chance to take Jared Goff here. How do I feel about Jared Goff? I think has to factor into that equation. What do we get on Twitter?
Here's what we got from Irish Jaguar. No personal opinion, but never trade with a division rival, and once we get good, never with an AFC or Super Bowl rival either. From Alvaro, this question is full of intrigue. My quick answer is hell no. Screw the Texans. Jags don't have to. From Daniel, no, you never make a move that would make your divisional competition better. From Eric, man, that price would be hella steep, but if it's incredibly lucrative, then yeah, I could do it. From Jag Junkie, why would we do that? They already have a quarterback. Mister can do it all on the field, J.J. Watt. From Brandon, I'll take Watt just to see Doom's reaction. From Duval Doom, only for their next three first-round picks and Watt has to go on ESPN and admit he's an overrated poop stain. From Andy, no, keep drafting the way the Jags are and let the Texans stay in purgatory. From Jarrell, sure, but it would have to be an RG3 2012-type draft day deal at a minimum. It'd be more than that. From Black Dog, negative. I would do everything in my power to sabotage that franchise as long as it doesn't hurt me more. And from Andy, depends. Can we decide who they are stuck with for the next 15 years? Can it be someone useless? I'm afraid you don't get to...
You'd know, though,
right,
who the
you know who they're
were.
Coming for, but you don't get to make the trade and pick for them.
Right. Maybe, who knows? Maybe they surprise you pick a quarterback. But you would know they're coming for a quarterback. Here's the pool of quarterbacks. Are we afraid of any of these guys? And I'm not saying... Maybe Jared Goff turns out to be great. Maybe, you know, look, this is a crazy hypothetical. I'm not suggesting... that it's anywhere in the realm of likely to happen. I was more curious of the Jaguar fans' mindset. I think the initial reaction from the overwhelming majority is hell no, not under any circumstances, unless, well, of course the compensation's going to be steep. I mean, we've seen it.
The compensation would be nuts.
When you come
to go from 22 to 5 to get a quarterback.
And in the division to get a quarterback, of course it would be steep. Nobody's saying you're doing it for the 22nd pick and a bag of popcorn. I mean, you'd have to love what you're getting back. I just don't understand the idea you never make a division rival better. What if you make them better by 1% and you make yourself better by 20%? Right? If that's the way you saw it, you're making them better. Isn't that a huge net gain in your favor? Right? I mean, don't you have to look at the net gain of what you think, who's improving themselves more relative to the other team?
Right, and you're talking about a team moving up 17 spots in the draft to go get a quarterback because they obviously feel like this is the quarterback of this draft. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, but it's the steep price they're going to have to pay to get there, along with the gamble that this is the quarterback of the future for that franchise.
Right.
It's all of that being taken into account. And for the fans out there that say, no, I'm never going to help a division rival, you could be crippling a division rival.
Could be.
I mean, there's the potential that they're moving up to 5. They're taking the wrong guy. They're giving up their next 2 drafts, essentially, to go do it. You could be crippling Houston for the next 6-7 years.
Exactly.
In that deal as well. And I think that has to come into some kind of account, depending on the compensation that you're going to get, which, like we said, would be really steep. I don't see a circumstance where that's what Houston's doing.
No, in fact, Tony, I think it's less likely that Houston would do it
right.
than the Jaguars would do it.
I don't see them doing that kind of thing, but the idea that you just say no because it's Houston, I think you got to think a little bit deeper than that.
I put it this way. I mean, I get the fan perspective. It's a division rival. We hate the Texans. Fine. I don't want to do anything with them. If I'm the Texans, I'm sitting there going, well, clearly the Jags aren't taking a quarterback. We're going to wait. We're going to make this offer
right.
to Baltimore because I think the Texans would be more fearful that they're handing all these picks to Dave Caldwell and they're coming up for a guy that there's uncertainty. And first of all, he's probably not the best quarterback in the draft, or at least he's not the first quarterback selected. I think they'd be a lot less likely to do it than the Jags would if there were, you know, if a neutral observer was able to come up with true fair compensation, whatever that is. It's always in the eye of the beholder. I think Houston would be more reticent to make that deal because they'd be afraid of the bust factor with these rookie quarterbacks.
I know I would be.
I would too. I wouldn't make that deal
I'd
from
have
Houston's
to be,
perspective.
I mean, I'd have to be sure this is the guy.
Right. You'd have to love him. And now, if that's the case, then you're willing to make that move, as we saw with the Redskins. They're, I'm sure, regretting it now. But what if RG3 had turned out to be, I don't know, pick your guy, right? I mean, what if he turned out to be Cam Newton?
Right. Well, Atlanta was sure Julio Jones was the guy. And
right.
they made the move. And
they
Julio,
were right.
Julio's been great, right? And I think the Giants were sure that Eli Manning was the guy. And whatever the price was going to be to get that done, they got it done with San Diego in the end, and it's been good for the New York Giants.
It's been worth it to the Giants.
Right. So you have to be sure. This is if you're giving up that kind of thing, there is no guessing.
But you can't be sure. That's the thing. You have to believe that you know, right? And that's what Washington did with RG3. And after one season, Tony, it looked like, hey, you know what? The price was steep, but damn. This guy looks phenomenal, right? So, I mean, after 1 year, so you can never be sure. You have to feel sure about it, and that's the best you can hope for. Anyway, that was a fun way to end the week. I enjoyed it. Anyway, thanks for all the feedback via Twitter and the text line and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Thanks to Johnny O for stopping by. We appreciate Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, our title sponsor on Fridays on Jaguars Today. So, Final thought, what you got cooking up this weekend before you head up to Indy?
ESPN3 tomorrow, UNF women's basketball as they take on USC Upstate tomorrow at 2 o'clock on ESPN3. And other than that, I'm chilling. This weekend is the plan.
I'll see you Tuesday
is
what I will do because I am I'm hitting the golf course tomorrow. And I got my cousin Mike coming into town on Monday, and I will be reprising my hitting of the golf course on Monday. So as you toil away with Brent Martineau popping in with you, sitting in on Jaguars today on Monday. That does it for us. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping up the week of Jaguars today. XL Primetime straight ahead right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!